You are listening to FinOps Today, a podcast from Ramp, where the world's most innovative finance leaders share what's on their agenda. Here's your host, Ramp's own head of finance and capital markets, Alex Song.
Hi, welcome to FinOps Today. On this week's episode, we're speaking with Patty Kay of Stripe. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Alex.
Would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about what it is that you do at Stripe?
Yeah, so I lead the payments, finance, and strategy team at Stripe. So that's one of our, obviously, largest products at Stripe. And so I manage the finance for that.
How did you come to Stripe in the first place? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I've been at Stripe for 3.5 years now, and for the last 6 months have led the payments, finance, and strategy team. But actually, at Stripe, I've had 3 different roles with kind of 10 underlying movements underneath all of that. So prior to the payments team, I led the corporate finance team. So that included investor relations and all the fundraising, everything Stripe consolidated, financials, board materials, et cetera, as well as the global finance teams. And before that, I ran corporate development and strategy for a little bit. I did go-to-market, pricing, and some others all within the finance world. And so it's been an eventful 3.5 years here at Stripe. And prior to that, I was 14 years at JP Morgan, 10 of which was in the investment banking area, worked across different technology companies, and actually moved over to the mergers and acquisitions team and specialized and got to do everything from buy an oil well in Texas to sell a bank in Canada. And after kind of 10 years of investment banking, decided I wanted to, you know, after having met a lot of great operators, decided I wanted to actually operate. And so started doing a lot of coffee chats and a lot of job board searching at JP Morgan /careers, and actually moved into and was the CFO of the partner credit card business. So think like the Disney, Amazon, United credit card business, which is a significant business at JP Morgan. And then after 2 years of that, moved into the payments group. And then had a discussion with Will Gabrick, who was the former CFO and now the chief product officer, and the rest is history. And now it's Stripe.
That's fascinating. So it sounds like corporate finance, M&A, you did that for a number of years. Then you actually took an operating role inside JP Morgan. Yes. And then subsequently you transitioned over to Stripe.
Yes. Yeah. And it's been a journey. And I joined Stripe around 1,300 employees 3.5 years ago, and we're currently over 7,000. So have really seen a lot of growth in the last couple of years.
Absolutely. What was that like? I mean, compared to a company like Ramp, right? I mean, even 1,700 seems huge in comparison, but even, you know, and then before that, you were at JP Morgan. What was the transition like, I guess, from corporate finance into that operating role, into that first operating role? And then maybe you can also talk about that second transition of, you know, a monolith organization like JP Morgan transitioning into Stripe. So I guess two pretty significant transitions.
Well, it was terrifying. I think having literally Googled what does a credit card P&L look like when I was interviewing for that job. But I think moving into an operating role and actually having a team and to be responsible for kind of the financial management, part of the reason I think they took me on into that role was because of my M&A experience. So I had the partner credit card business also has a lot of contracts with these large users. So Amazon, United, Southwest, and we were in an 18-month period where we renegotiated, I think, over 80% of the entire partner credit card book. So my deal experience was actually helpful in that. And then managing the P&L and being able to understand, you know, business cases and analyzing kind of P&Ls and telling the story as I had been doing in investment banking, I think was key. And so it was a big transition, and I learned a lot from the people around me. You know, I had very strong mentors who would support me as well as a strong team. And so it was a really interesting transition. And actually easier than I think I would have thought, just given kind of like my experience with a lot of different businesses before. And then moved into the payments role 2 years later, which was JP Morgan's payments group, which was, you know, one of the fastest growing and top priorities for Jamie at the time. And so really grew that business. And, you know, they are one of the largest legacy payments providers in North America and in Europe. And so getting a seat there and just understanding how they thought about their business and how they would move with a lot of their large users, or from small businesses to their kind of like large users and investment banking and treasury products, and how they thought about payments in that kind of spectrum was very interesting. And then moved over to Stripe. It was a really rude awakening, I think. I think I learned all the different technology applications. I think I learned how to use a Mac for the first time. I used Zoom for the first time in an interview with Stripe. Slack, Google Docs was completely new for me. And I had been a PC Excel person my entire life. So my efficiency was was nowhere to be found in the first 6 months. I remember Patrick getting on my computer when I was a little slow on Google Sheets inputting headcount numbers. But I think there's quite a lot of natural differences that I think I expected, but until I saw, I didn't really understand. But, you know, when you are working for a 100-year-old company versus kind of the 10-year-old company, you know, there's a lot of these processes and systems that you kind of take for granted. You know, Jamie Dimon had a business review every 6 weeks for some of it for his business lines. And that, you know, you had the calendar through the whole year. And so you had this, like, you had the rhythms of, you know, public earnings and when Marianne needed her kind of, you know, earning scripts and all that. And then coming to, you know, Stripe at the time that I did, you know, a lot of that stuff, you know, like from the simplest things as expense approvals and T&E, how do you go manage that to what is the right cadence, the operating cadence of the business? So, you know, is quarterly right? We had a period where we were doing something called high tempo reviews. So reviews that should happen more often because decisions needed to make faster and we shouldn't wait for kind of a quarter. And so, and as you're growing so quickly, even the attendee list of who should be on these meetings took a lot more time and thought. And the secret sauce of, you know, Stripe is really, you know, at its core, you know, it's technology, and you don't want to overburden any of that with a lot of process. So, you know, operating cadences was just a big shock to me. And then I think the other one, you know, the true kind of technology culture, you know, I came from payments, a really big payments company within JP Morgan, to Stripe as a payments company. And because JP Morgan was in it, you know, payments was a mature product for them. You know, they had mature teams surrounding it, go to market. There's a whole finance team, there were systems, there was processes all in place. And when I joined at kind of 1300 employees, a majority of the team was product and engineers. And, you know, there's probably not a meeting that I had, like a majority of my meetings had product and engineer, and we were getting into code and language. And I think with that, I actually think for a finance executive, that actually gives you more of an opportunity because you're surrounded by all this to make an impact, right? And, but you have to figure out, it's like, it's a fine line of, you know, putting any process on top of kind of innovation, figuring out what process actually drives a better result versus just slows people down and bogs them down with processes. And so I think that to me has been the two kind of biggest changes for me in the different companies. But broadly, both companies try to make strategic long-term bets. Both companies, I couldn't have asked for better mentors and teachers along the way. And for both, I think finance plays a crucial role in decision-making and has a seat at the table. And so have really enjoyed both sides of my career from that standpoint.
Very cool. Very interesting. Yeah, tell us more about the early days. Maybe the early days of Stripe when you first joined, and feel free to be as granular as possible, right? What did the finance team look like? You know, who did you report to? Who reported to you? And, you know, yeah. I think there's just a lot under the hood that I think probably a lot of our listeners just wondering, like, what is even, you know, how centralized was it? How decentralized was it? Like, what was your day to day? And then maybe like later on, we'll also look at like what it looks like today. But maybe for now, like, what did those early days look like?
So I was leading everything. When you think about a traditional finance organization, I was leading everything but accounting, treasury, and tax. So we had, you know, the first pricing person started the same day I had. The corporate development team was one person. And, you know, we had only a couple people focused on product finance. And I think the whole corporate team was two or three people. And so think about, you know, like, again, 1,300 with a very, very small percentage of it being like finance, like strategic finance, and a bigger kind of accounting and treasury and tax group, but still relatively small to what he had. And so at that point, I was reporting into the CFO and managing kind of all these. And, you know, we were growing significantly, but like one person going to two people is not, or, you know, the corporate development team going from one to three and now is like a much bigger organization. But like those days were really scrappy, but I'll say, and it wasn't a traditional finance team either. Like actually a lot of the background of the people were kind of consultants or investment bankers or all that who, you know, I had high horsepower, but actually didn't know what, like, you know, I think when I said, hey, you know, I would like cleaned up cost centers for, you know, to look at expense reviews, that type of stuff was like, you know, was like, oh, well, that's not my job. I was like, well, of course it is, you know, and they're like, well, I do more strategy. And I was like, well, you know, finance numbers are really dumb without strategy, and strategy is really dumb without finance. So you have to be a full stack CFO, right? So for a lot of these businesses, you'd have like many full stack CFOs across the different areas, but really not super well staffed. And so those early days, even planning and thinking about, you know, like, what things do you prioritize and how do you justify it? And headcount management and like all that stuff was really raw, I guess. And creating even monthly finance reviews to go through the budget and like what they're like, what is a budget? What number is mine? And how do you get accountability? Like a lot of that was super, super early on. And they were finance numbers, not business numbers. And like over time, you know, obviously that has had to change. But I think in 3 years, you know, and now we're about a year and a half to when Divya joined as well, you know, she's obviously brought a wealth of experience at very mature organization. And so it's actually been like warming to see after, you know, a year and a half without earlier stages. And now, you know, and when she came on, my role changed and I led corporate finance, just given my experience navigating kind of all aspects of finance, you know, from my earlier days. And, you know, I think people were like, oh, well, you know, that's maybe a bit of a smaller role. And I was like, well, yeah, like JP Morgan has four business unit CFOs, one big corporate finance role. You know, at all mature companies, a lot of this stuff moves around and breaks apart and org chart, you know, like, and I had corporate development for 2 years and then that moved into a strategy group. You know, a lot of this stuff, like you do have to move and you need to have the depth of experience in a lot of different places and grow with the business, right? And so we've evolved it ever since. And, you know, I was in that corporate finance role for a year and then moved over within the last 6 months and actually quite enjoying being very focused day to day on like the details of the business, which, you know, in corporate finance, you know, a lot about everything.
It sounds, I mean, a lot of those comments definitely resonate with me, right? Because I think, you know, the building out the early team, it sounds like, you know, you obviously want a lot of financial acumen, you want a lot of horsepower, yeah. Folks that are almost, you know, multidisciplinary or just they're well-rounded folks. Yeah. But I think what I'm hearing is that light on practitioner or like practical experience with operational finance, right? And just building that out. Two follow-up questions on that. Sure. One is, did that change over time or how and, you know, if at all that's changed, or have you hired more practitioners to fill out that sort of functional layer? That's kind of, you know, I would say question number one. And two, with the movements and the different groups and obviously yourself switching roles a couple of times, who makes that decision? And is that a very centralized or decentralized decision? And, you know, it sounds like you're pretty happy, right? But, you know, are there folks that maybe, you know, weren't as happy? So with the evolution of the finance function? I guess those are my two questions.
Yeah. It definitely changed. I think at the core of it, right? Like, and I've said this a bunch to the people, is like, at the end of the day, you're still, you know, as much as you may be hiring experts in certain things, like we now have a head of FinOps, we have like different specialties with people with a lot of experience. At the end of the day, we're still testing for people who can make any strategy and any business smarter because they're in the seat. And so, you know, even like down to the expense person, if you're just ticking and tying and just making sure the books kind of tie, like that's not enough to, you know, for us to hire. So I think you need both the expertise and the thing. I think it, you know, I've been here 3.5 years. I think for the first year, it continued to be like hiring a lot of athletes across. I think in the second and third year I've been here, we have added a lot of depth to the experiences that we have, people who have been and have done and have built out certain areas. And then I think it's always about a diversity of different people, right? So my team right now, you know, I have like a gentleman who was an investor for the last like 15 years, and that he brings a very different experience. And then someone who has more mature kind of FP&A experience. And then someone who was at one of the networks and actually had a big stint in product. And so having a diversity of bench, I think is really important. The one other thing that I would say is like, I think hiring leaders early is important. And I think I probably was a little late to that as well. But the person that is comfortable, you're always looking for the person who's comfortable in 3 years with like much more complexity, much more scale, and all that. And for each one of your functions and areas, you kind of have to think about which ones are the most important and where should you be hiring ahead. And not necessarily like, obviously, I love the person who knows how to build it from the ground up and the person who knows what it's like in 3 years. But it's actually, for me, more important that that person knows what it should be in a few years and has the right North Star, because it, to the extent you hire a lot of people who just do a lot of work and then you lose track of that kind of like 3-year outlook, I think that could be painful and it may take a lot more resources and people with that. But I think, again, it's a balance all the time. I think figuring out who has the expertise and, you know, who can grow into it. And I think it's about diversity of team, I think, over time. And then who makes the decision? I think that's a good question. I think there's quite a lot of people who make that decision. I think, you know, at least personally for me, it was lots of career discussions over the years and, you know, and not even like career discussions just when the move is going to happen, but career discussions over a longer period of time that is a two-way discussion with your manager, with other people that you trust around for both roles, you know, had long discussions that started when Divya came and she was like, hey, you know, there's like a lot under you and like, let's get a couple more pillars. And I'm like, yeah, that's the natural evolution. You know, we were, I think at that time on the verge of like doing the fundraise and $95 billion, of course, at that, you know, and so probably to others, you're like, oh, well, you know, you used to do this and you did this. And I was like, we're at a different stage of company than I joined. And so it was a two-way discussion. And I think for the product role, very similar. It was kind of like, hey, you know, you've done that, you know, your ability to work with the product teams and just how to navigate Stripe would be very useful in a role like this. It also like gets you closer to the business, which I really had wanted and allowed me to build out another team. And so that was a discussion. It doesn't work for everyone, I think, you know, and some people, there's a lot of people who have left Stripe over the years, you know, that joined a company that was 1,000 people where they could do, you know, be CFO of 5 different things. And then now, you know, they are half of one thing and because that's what Stripe requires. So I think having the North Star of what the company requires and like, how do you best support the business, I think is an ongoing discussion. And I think about how much we've grown and a lot of it in the product and engineering teams and go-to-market teams. And I want to make sure that our partners, our business partners, like come to us as a first call and making sure that I am not the bottleneck, but that there is like lots of people in the organization that can support kind of the growing company. So I don't know if that answered your question, but
yeah, very cool. What does your day-to-day look like today? How many people report to you? What's the size of your team? How many of those people did you hire?
Yeah, so I have been in this role for 6 months now, and I've more than doubled the team. So the team when I joined was probably like 6 people, and now we're nearing kind of 15. And so at Stripe, and the whole time I've been here, it is always be recruiting different people. And so, you know, I think that was, I spent probably 30% of my time over the first few months kind of trying to build out the team and functions. And, you know, I had this comparable team when I was at JP Morgan, and that was 10 times the size, I guess, that we have here. And so it is pretty scrappy. But the way my team is structured right now is, you know, I have different flavors of the payments product. So there's our in-person, so our terminal product. We have Connect, which is our platform product. So like, you know, the likes of platform and marketplaces. So the likes of like DoorDash and Shopify are on the Connect platform. And then, so those are two kind of flavors of it. And then obviously the everything happens in overall payment. So there's people specialized in each area. And then I have someone actually who does kind of longer term projects. So thinking about kind of 4-year and what's business cases and ROI and like competitive landscape and some others. So it's kind of like things a little bit farther removed from the day-to-day, but obviously if you're too far removed, it's not helpful. So that's kind of the structure. I just put that in place like a week ago, so we'll see. But it'll continue. Like I think the business has continued to evolve and structure, and I will continue to move. I think change is definitely a constant around here.
And does this sound like, and I don't know if this is the right interpretation, but it sounds like there are folks on your team that are focused on product finance, like for example, Connect, right? And there are folks who are maybe focused on, I don't know what to describe, maybe strategic finance. And all of that notwithstanding, I think everyone still rolls up to payments. Is that sort of the right way to think about, you know, the function that some of these folks serve?
People ask me that all the time, and I'll say I still don't quite get the distinction. So I've only ever worked at, you know, like Stripe and then JP Morgan, which definitely didn't have a distinction. I guess product finance to me, so like let's take the Connect or terminal products or, you know, features. Like when you're working with the product, to the extent you're not asking them the questions of what are the things that you're investing in, how do you think about, you know, what products are you building for what user segment and all that, is that product or is that strategic finance? We do not structure our team that way. I think lots more people are kind of full stack, and which is daunting as well, because that's a lot of questions to ask, from their headcount, their expenses, to their budget, to what's their, you know, for your outlook, to, you know, how do they allocate their headcount, and, you know, headcount's like the most precious thing, to what product are they building, and then how does Connect, you know, like for our biggest marketplaces and platforms, we distribute embedded, you know, financial products. So our banking, our treasury products, which are, you know, our money management tools and our, you know, and lending. And so how does that go into Connect? And so we have made these roles kind of more full stack, and there isn't a distinction between product and strategy for us at least at this point in time. I have spoken to a lot of people who have over time separated those out to FP&A and strategic finance. We have not done that with our teams.
And is there, and now this is just my personal curiosity, is there someone at Stripe with your job, but sitting inside Stripe Atlas or maybe Stripe Capital, or yeah, obviously you guys have a lot of other products as well that are maybe not necessarily payments focused, right? Is there someone who does what you do for those functions?
Yeah, there is. So payments is one of the bigger products, and then more mature. And then we do have a counterpart doing kind of the banking products. So think, you know, the lending products with capital issuing, which is issuing cards, and then kind of money management with treasury. And then like some of like the, even the startup verticals are in that area. And then we have kind of our revenue management and Radar product, or Radar, which is our fraud management and some others. So there are different product areas, and we do organize kind of our finance team that way.
I see. And I wonder if this is something that would be easy or hard for you to handicap, but among, you know, maybe yourself, your personal experience, and the rest of your team, what percent of the time do you spend on, and maybe this goes back to even to the last question, on sort of operational finance versus strategic finance, you know, the day-to-day stuff, which is just to keep the engine going, make sure nothing blows up, right? Versus let's tackle a multi-month or multi-year project. Is there an easy division that you can kind of make in your mind?
I'll tell you what my goal is this year. And actually a goal of mine is to spend 50% on both, I guess. And I don't even think operational finance is, I mean, that can sound like it's, well, I'm just trying to reconcile or produce budget versus actuals or that type of stuff. But actually, right, like all of the questions that you're asking about execution today are meant to answer, are you focused on the right execution today to provide the biggest kind of long-term levers? And like, are you positioned to be the biggest, you know, banking payments like winner in kind of 5 years and 10 years? And I think, and all of those ramp, I didn't mean to say ramp, but like all of those are meant to grow into big, bigger businesses. And so I do try to spend 50-50. I think it's very easy as a, you know, like day-to-day, what is everyone asking me day-to-day? It's like, it is operational finance type stuff. But I think personal goal this year, as well as I think up the chain, is like make sure that we are spending just as much time operational finance as we are strategic or kind of longer term, I guess, is how I think about it.
Yep. I think balancing that, it's a non-trivial exercise.
Non-trivial.
I guess I'll say that. Yeah. I mean, even today, you know, my team, which encompasses all of finance for all of RAMP, right? Yeah. It is pretty tough, right? It's pretty tough because we 10x the business last year. And I would say almost in under any circumstance, you're going to be just mired in fire drills and the day-to-day stuff. And it leaves very little room, I think, for multi-quarter or multi-year planning. And it's absolutely, you know, a struggle that we deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. I think that it is a struggle. Like, again, the fire drills come into this, but I truly believe, and like even last year, we spent more time doing long-term planning than we did short-term planning. And I'm not sure that this is the right thing, but as we think about like even where does headcount allocation go, like there's a way where, you know, teams ask for it and say, I'm going to build X, Y, and Z this year. The question is like, are they building the things that will lead to the best kind of four-year outcomes? And we, you know, tried to take a step back and do that last year. We did kind of like long range planning. We actually had like an offsite that did, you know, like, what do we look like in 2030? And what are the trends there? And spent a fair bit of time there. And it was like a hard exercise because who knows what's going to happen 2030, but it was very helpful for us to understand, hey, these are the big drivers, right? Like where is, you know, like payment methods getting more complex, cross-border becoming more apparent, like globalization, like that type of stuff, and making sure that we're producing ahead of the trends. But it is no easy task. And I'm even trying to figure out if like, do we have a quarterly check-in on like, you know, at least red, yellow, green, are we on track for kind of our 4 years? So you don't make it this like, you know, like 4 year goals by initiative so that you don't make that a one time a year exercise and then just kind of like roll along and be like, oh, well, you know, like it's maybe a slightly off budget, but it's so small right now. And so it doesn't matter. But like, I think it is the secret to us to make sure that you have carved out time and people who think about that all the time, I think is important.
Let me ask you this, and this is perhaps the crux of even this podcast, or the crux of what, you know, what the secrets that we're trying to uncover here, right? And as someone who's running, you know, a payments business, like literally, right, Stripe, payments business, Ramp, another payments business, here's the question: operating leverage. How are you finding operating leverage? And I want to maybe focus on two areas. One is internally. At Stripe, are there things that you're doing, structures you're putting in place, best practices, tips, right, for finding operating leverage? Because you could just hire people. You could just keep on hiring as, you know, tasks arise. You can just throw money at the problem, right? Are there things you're doing organizationally to find better operating leverage? That's area one. Area two, maybe externally, vendors, partners, right, software tools, you know, maybe the Google Docs, right, out there. But what are you also using to find time and finding operating leverage? Maybe that's external to Stripe. So maybe let's focus on that a little bit. I would love to hear, you know, how you're managing a massively, you know, growing organization that's both growing in size and complexity.
Yeah. So I think headcount and capital allocation and like ROI is like my hero. My other second kind of equal hero this year of things is, you know, systems. And I think that's part of it. It's ensuring that everything that we make and touch scales. So you have to like look at every process we have and ensure that if it does times five, you are still happy with this thing and that it is not 500% or five people that have to do it versus one, that it scales over time. And there is like 30% increase when you increase it over kind of times five. And that is like more products, more countries, more segments, more like everything, every piece of the process is there. And so I would say that. And then I think two is ensuring that we have like all the data and things cut in the way that we want. And I think, you know, a lot of times we're, you know, we're trying to, you know, like we've been focusing on like overall kind of like corporate clothes and everything, but like making sure that we have the right insights in the business and focused on the right metrics. Like, I think, again, you could cut payments data by user, by country, by, you know, there's like so many things. And at the end of the day, you're going to have a database with like a million different fields and cuts, and focusing the business on the right metrics and ensuring that you have the reporting and underlying things has been kind of like my most important thing. And so to get alignment on those top metrics, to make sure you're looking at the top metrics instead of having just a data pack. And maybe you still need a data pack of 100 pages with 100 cuts, but you have to actually focus the business. And that's actually quite hard because everyone's going to be like, oh, well, how about this cut and how about this cut? But like focusing the business. So those are my places on operating leverage. On the, I think, vendors and software, I have not probably personally done a lot of that, but I think utilizing, like, you know, we use Anaplan for our, you know, clothes type stuff, and like making sure that, you know, we have the modules in there that add efficiency all around. We use Salesforce as well to manage things. And so like, you know, our pricing tool, for instance, was in, you know, a separate spreadsheet and it wasn't attached, and therefore sometimes data was different. And so figuring out how to blend those in together. I think we use Workday and Greenhouse for kind of like recruiting and people and like, you know, even just looking at like who was accepted where and what org and when it's changing and the numbers don't tie. So I think trying to, you know, more what my area has been, not actually looking for kind of new vendors, but actually making them work together and having a single source of truth through different vendors has been something that I think we've been focused on. I don't think we're great at yet, but actually have made a ton of progress over the last couple of years.
That's fascinating. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword. I mean, it's comforting because we literally face all of the same exact issues right now. Dashboarding, making sure we're looking at the same KPIs, right? Is the sales team versus the engineering team versus the finance team even looking at the same definition of churn, for example, right? Or whatever, which is very top of mind. And then, Yeah, and making sure that we have good integration of software totally. So that we have a single source. It's comforting because you're identifying exactly the pain points that we have. It's also not so comforting because I know that in the coming years, this doesn't stop, right? This project it's an unsolvable problem and you can only hope to chip away at it.
Yeah. I think so. But you know, the more you could do it early on, so and like, you know, again, future proof is the wrong word, but like scale proof, I guess you're as much as possible those things and not kind of like let things fester. I think it is one of those things that I think we'll still be facing in a few years and such. But we should
yeah.
take your notes at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to be sensitive to your time. So maybe I'll leave you with a closing question, which is maybe one, what are you most looking forward to for yourself and your team over the course of, you know, this coming year? And then two, maybe what are you most looking forward to for Stripe, for the overall company? You know, are we going to see, you know, an S1? Are we going to see, you know, some movement there? I'm sure a lot of our listeners are very curious and maybe you can't comment on that, but yeah, maybe something exciting on the horizon for either the company and also for yourself and your team.
Yeah, for the team, I think we've grown significantly and I am most excited about, I guess, serving the business. I that sounds super cliche and it's all this, but you know, our product and engineering team, you know, they have so many decisions ahead of them. Like, how do we prioritize X, Y, Z? What should we be doing? How do we work with our global teams? Where should we do? And like bringing some sanity and bringing that all together and really helping them with their decisions, I think is, and better able to do that with kind of like the team that we have grown this year. So I think for me, continuing to do that and making sure we're positioned for 4 years out, 4 years, 10 years out. On a Stripe basis, you know, obviously I can't comment about any public rumors out there about that. They've been with me for the last 3.5 years since I've been here. But I think for us it is, you know, I think we have a lot of newer products, you know, like with our banking products and, you know, our revenue management. And we had a couple crypto announcements and there's like a lot more to come. I think bringing that together for the user and more integrating it like through our Connect platform and making sure that all of these things work together, I think is Stripe's big ambition over the next few years. And I share that because I think that's kind of the power of like, once you're in the Stripe ecosystem, checking the box on all these other value-added services is exciting.
Very cool. Well, Ramp is certainly, you know, I mean, as you know, yes. I mean, we're very, very, you know, happy about the partnership that we've been yeah. able to develop over the past, yeah. you know, year or so, you know, no strangers. I think our listeners are no strangers to the fact that you guys are one of our largest investors, right? And so yeah. we hopefully are, you know, tapping into, you know, product partnerships and whatnot yeah. into the future and just be a part of the broader ecosystem, right? Yeah. I guess I'll leave it there. I mean, Patty, this was...
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. We've been trying to land someone from Stripe for a while for the podcast. So really happy to have you on. And thank you so much for the comments.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for the invite. I was really happy to join and Stripe is equally excited about the partnership and are very happy investors. Thank you. And congrats on your fundraising as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. It really helps to spread the word. Until next time, this is FinOps Today from RAM.